Hello, hello. Welcome back to Inspiring African Travel. This is James here, and we are up to episode 4 of our latest series, series number 8, Africa's Transformational Travel Power. Hope you've been enjoying it so far. It's been a really interesting one for us. I've thoroughly enjoyed exploring the deep power of travel in Africa and had a really good chat in this episode with a good friend of mine and a professional guide, Dave Carson. We used to bump into each other a lot in northern Botswana on the back end of his trips, and he's been a guide since the late 90s and is incredibly well recognized in his field, not just for his phenomenal understanding of the natural world and how he interprets it for his travelers, but actually for the incredible support he provides to other guides all across Zimbabwe, Botswana, and Africa. Dave runs Kazuma Trails, which is a wonderful company operating from a very intimate place in Hwange National Park called Hwange Bush Camp in Zimbabwe. Well known for incredible elephant interactions. You can go on superb walking safaris out there in Hwange. And what makes Dave's operation really unique, and we chat about a lot of this in the episode, is the fact that he's got a guide license in Botswana as well. So he can craft really distinctive trips that cross into Botswana and into Zimbabwe, giving an amazing blend of two of Africa's finest wilderness destinations. But obviously, I pressed Dave a lot about what makes mobile safaris so transformative and his role as a guide, what he's seen and what he's witnessed over the years. And our conversation explores all sorts of the profound experiences that Dave's had over the years and the lessons he's learned along the way. We also discuss a lot about safari camps all over Africa and all the lodges, how they potentially add unnecessary layers, one could say, that ultimately distract from what is most appealing about being in the African wilderness, getting back to what really matters. What gave me the idea of getting in touch with Dave to do this podcast is the fact that he has a podcast called Safari Insight, and I really recommend it. He's had all sorts of people on it so far. A guide, Mark Jermake, who rode across the Atlantic in record time, to a conversation about the miraculous process of life inside an eggshell. It's all sorts of fascinating stuff and well worth your time. And I hope you enjoy our chat as we dig deep into what he feels makes traveling in Africa transformative and how he's been a part of that journey for so many other people. I really hope you enjoy it, and please feel free to get in touch with me or Dave, or any questions or ideas you have. We're always here. Enjoy it. Catch you later.
I've been up since a bit early. I think I might have drunk too much coffee. You'll see I'm fidgeting a lot.
Is your missus going to bring you a coffee midway through, or she said you've had enough now?
She was showering. I'll probably have to have a coffee at some stage. Yeah, I'm still on a mobile in my pip, so we'll see how we go. You'll get some random information. It might not be exactly what you want.
Have you, Dave, have you had your mid-morning or your early morning post-coffee?
I'm all good. Calling? I'm 100%.
Okay, just check. I thought if you need to give the signal, I was like, okay.
No, it's all good. No. More if I can't answer a question.
Fine. Okay. So I was trying to think when I first met you, and I think it might have been out on the Chobe floodplains. I think you must have dropped off guests quite regularly at the Kazangula border or Kasani or something to fly out, and then you had time on your hands, and I'd be out birding out on the floodplains, which, as I know, it's where you find a few other operators and other travelers and you go out doing some lacquer birding. It was either there or at the Irish pub in Berlin at the trade show.
Yeah, I think my wife was actually asking me this morning, and I said, you know, I said, I think James and I started to meet each other at trade shows and started to get to know, obviously, I've got a big affinity with the Mound boys and some of the guys from Kasani through the cricket and all that. And I think we just kind of, you know, got to know each other a little bit on the way there. But I do remember seeing you in your, I think it's a Prado, your silver Prado.
That's the one. The beast.
Out on those floodplains, just doing your own thing and just cruising around, which I always love. I love seeing people out doing their own thing. It's a much purer experience, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that says a lot about you as a guide, because I like the fact that, as you said, it's wonderful when you see a guide in his time off guiding himself.
Yeah, true. Yes, yeah, exactly. It's actually one of the things that Lataka and I talk about a lot is that, you know, one of the things Grant, we talk about, because obviously he comes from the training side as well, and obviously they've got a lovely company and does well. But he said the one thing he lacks a little bit in say, in bots is just the, you know, in here in Zim, we've got a really good network of guides who love being on, not just safari, but love the inquisitive, the curiousness, the all that sort of stuff. So that's why we've now have Grant helping us on some of our guide trainings here in Zim as well. You know, a lot of the guys in Mount are really good oaks, but they all, when on their days off, they really are off, really are off, which I love them for it. But at the same time, you know, it's nice to go out and do some birding and do different stuff and go, hey, I saw this elephant jaw. Come have a look and drive an hour to see that it's got one tooth or whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. As you know, it's a bit of an interesting topic. Maybe nice and deep for you, first thing in the morning. But I thought you would bring a really interesting perspective on transformative travel. Because being a guide, you're effectively the sort of curator of these experiences, if you like. Or the sensei, if you really want to get weird about it. But it is some one of these words that, I mean, we've been had all sorts of buzzwords thrown at us from the travel industry over the years. Like from the early days when we started, we just did it, you know, but then it became fashionable and responsible travel, ecotourism, all of this. And transformative for me is the latest one, but I quite like it. And I wanted to know your thinking about what you think transformative travel means to you or your travelers.
James, yeah, that's you know, it's actually quite interesting you bring this up in terms of, and it's now that we've got a phrase for it. And as you've mentioned, you know, I still do a lot of guiding. I'm still very fortunate in that I get to go out a lot and, you know, meet a lot of different people in all different walks of life. And the one thing I'm always fascinated with is often if it's the first time they're here on safari, it's just to watch like the change in them. So many times they come to see animals, but it actually changes during the safari. You know, they get to meet the people. They get, you know, and yes, they see the animals. And then some of them even, you know, see a few pretty birds and start to think, hey, hold on, this is very cool. There's something different happening here. But also just, it's not just that. There's so much more. It's hard to explain. I mean, it's a little bit like we all have holidays that we like. And when you break them down, sometimes it's just because, you know, it's the smell when you get there. Like you're from Botswana. When I get into Botswana, the first thing when I smell the sage, I'm like, okay, I'm truly driving down a sandy road and I'm in Botswana. You know, it's for some guests, it's that first gin and tonic. For some, it's, well, on our safaris, we're fanatical about rusks. It's the tea and coffee, you know, rusks somewhere under some random tree in the middle of whatever park you're at. You know, so it changes people. And I think also, you know, those are the small things, but then the deeper is when they start to get a deeper connection with how everything is connected. You know, you can start with the plants, move through to the animals, and how everything, you know, literally depends on each other. I think, you know, that really, it really helps. And that's where, as a guide, your job is to give a vision, you know, give a vision to what the safari is about, what they're seeing, interpret what's happening. So it's not just about, you know, a lot of people watch these Discovery and Nat Geo, and there's some lovely stuff out there, but a lot of it is driven by a storyline. But when you're out there, it's sort of X-rated, it's genuine, it's raw. It's genuinely raw. It's not, I don't know, it's not just watered down, like, you know, suddenly the lions are hunting and then the next thing you see they're eating a buffalo. Yeah, if they're hunting, you're going to see the whole thing. It's genuine. It's there.
Do you think it's a case of, because obviously there's many different layers to traveling in Africa, but we're talking specifically about a safari in the wilderness areas. And I think a lot about it because I live in the UK now and get to travel back to Africa regularly. So my senses are a little bit more heightened when I go back to Africa because I'm excited. And my eyes are open. But I often find myself, I'm just talking off air to you about my trip to South Downs National Park here in the UK. And I find myself a little bit saddened sometimes because I'm not as in tune with the environment as what I am when I'm back in Africa. And the reason is there's so many distractions in the Western world or in the developed urbanized places. So in order to engage with nature, you have to really channel in to that moment and try and block out all the other distractions. Even when you're in a little national park in the UK, because there's stuff happening around you and you're not in the zone. And I think slowly but surely, I'm getting better at doing that. But I think when people come to Africa and you're in these wild spaces, there's absolutely nothing else, is there, Dave? Like your guests are 100% immersed with you and that environment. And so that environment suddenly becomes everything that there's no other distraction. So then you're starting to tell them what they're seeing and what they're doing. And they're like, right, suddenly you're completely in tune with the environment. Would you say that's one of the biggest things for guests?
Maybe it's just, you know, going back to exactly what you're saying, in that they 100% involved in what's happening in front of them. I think that's it. You know, I think that's it. It's a special and unique moment with them that they get to really feel something without the distractions. Yeah, I've never thought of that, you know, but you're right. You're 100% right. I see it in myself, in that I'll go on safari and I'm committed 110%. And then I'll get home and there are a lot of distractions. So I'm not as in tune. Little things. This is just a small thing. Like I'll be at home for 2 days and then I'll go on safari. I'm like, oh, the moon is full. I hadn't even noticed it because I'm at home with so many distractions. But yet, when I'm on safari, I know the phases of the moon because I'm going to be looking at the stars. But also I'm thinking to myself, if I'm in an area where, say, there's dogs, I'll be like, hey, they're going to be hunting with the moon. So maybe I've got to get up a bit earlier. You know, little things like that. But it is, you're right. You're 100% involved in that environment, and you're desperately trying to become part of that environment. I think that's what it is. And it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. For the first time, you're 100% connected to something. Whereas I think our world we live in nowadays, you know, we're connected, if we're lucky, 20% to whatever we're doing. But out there, you know, when there's no Wi-Fi, and it always saddens me, and I don't want to get on my high horse here, but I get sad when there's like, especially I go to lodges where there's Wi-Fi in the main area, because we then, you talk about connections, we stop connecting with other people around us. We stop sharing our experiences. We go out, we do our drive, we come back, and boom, we're straight on checking what's happening in the rest of the world. So it's not a complete connection all the time. But
yeah.
I'm not a hater on Wi-Fi, don't worry. I believe if you've got it in your room, it's the same as taking a shower. You go there, check some stuff, that's no drama. But when you come back, connect with other people, connect with the whole experience that everybody who's there, whether it be the managers, the guides sitting with you at dinner, you're totally connected with all of that. Because the whole experience is not just the animals. I mean, it's the one thing I've learned as a guide. I hear guides tell me this all the time. I want to be a guide because I love animals. I'm like, oh my gosh, be a vet. that's where you should be going, because we're about people. We're genuinely about people, and that's our job.
Yeah. I just want to touch on what you said earlier and also the aspect or the element of your guiding craft, if you like, because it must become second nature. You've been a guide since what? 90s, early 90s?
Yes. Now I suddenly feel old. You know what I'm actually...
But a long time. It's been a while.
It's been a while now.
But basically, you know, do you have a modus operandi, or how would you say that your experience and your what is your role in sort of shaping their journey and helping transform their whole trip?
Okay. Well, firstly, I qualified as a pro guide in end of 95. So, but I'd been in Zim, we have a system where you train so you're able to guide, but we train a long time. So I started helping building a camp in 1990. So been doing this a while, but I tell you one thing that's happened, and you talk about modus operandus. I'm probably, if you talk to any guests who've been with me, I'm quite a random sort of guide. I'm fortunate enough to, at this point, pull on, yes, a bit of experience here and there. But the one thing I've learned, I must admit, is that the more I learn, genuinely, the less I know. I actually feel I'm constantly worrying about my knowledge, how this trip's going to go, all those sort of things. It never really, I don't know. For me, I think my number one thing is I'm very comfortable being uncomfortable. I just worry about, if you're going to give a guest or guests a great experience, you can't be comfortable. You can't be that guide that is like, let's go see what nature provides. No. That's just randomly driving, knowing that you already know where your tea stop is. Like, as you leave camp, you know where you're having tea. I mean, that's disappointing to me. I mean, as a guide, and this is me personally, and I hope I don't offend any guides, but there's some wonderful guides out there, is that I just love the free-flowing. But also, I think the key is listening to your guests, and understanding where you fit in. Remember that there could be 100 emails that have gone back and forth between a guest and, a travel planner to get them to where you are. And you got to understand where you fit in. Now, my job is now to mold the safari. Okay, so say they've sold a mobile safari, or say they've sold our little bush camp in Wangi. Understanding what these guests' expectations are, but also what do they want to do? So listening to them on those first interactions, I think, is probably the most important for me. And then taking what I hear and just trying to give them what they want, but also giving them a little bit of outside possibly their comfort a little bit sometimes when we do the walking safaris, but obviously within limits. I think that's important.
So what can you give me some examples of, like, you've spoken about this, I think, a couple of times with some of the guides that you've had on your podcast. You've got to really have a knack with people on this. And I really love the fact that you put such emphasis on listening to your travelers and understanding their needs and wants. And I think those are where it's key, is separating the needs and the wants. And you mentioned putting them out of their comfort zone, because your role, I think, to get the best transformational experience out of a traveler in Africa on one of your trips, you've got to give them something they potentially didn't know that they needed, right? That's going to be their biggest like takeaway. So yeah, they come away. Oh, you want to see animals and have a great time in the African wilderness and learn about stuff with Dave. No, they that's simple. That's easy. They want to be like taken out of their comfort zone. They want to be put given experiences that they didn't know they needed in their life. So how do you talk to them when they arrive? How do you kind of like curate that whole experience?
Yeah, I think that comes with a bit of experience. So what I'll do, I don't really have a format, I must admit. But what I'll do is obviously I just start talking to the guests and just firstly hearing where they've come from, what they, you know, they may have, I'm always excited, like if I'm in Zim, if guests have, say, come from Bots, where they've seen good leopards, they've seen this, they've seen that, then I know in my mind, kind of like, okay, let me give them something else, not everything the same. They probably haven't got out of the vehicle much. Let me start them with a, you know, just a little walk, a little ramble. Let's see how they are. Let's see if anyone's nervous. You know, they might have come from a place where an Ellie looked at them or made some steps towards the car, and some of them felt a little intimidated. You know, you're about to go on walks. Let's be careful here. So you have to just start listening. The listening is the key, but also, and actually hear what they're saying and start reading the group and all that sort of stuff, or the people, and try and navigate around that. And understand that every activity can be different. You don't have to, you're not going to get it all in one. It's not going to work like that as a guide. It'll evolve. Your trip's going to evolve. Don't go too far ahead. Just, you know, work with what you're doing at that time. Right, we're heading out this morning. We're going to do a bit of a combination of a walk and a drive or whatever. And let's see how we go. And just see how your guests are reacting to that. I think that's so important. But again, it's understanding one thing. You know, one of the first camps that I was involved in and built, the big thing for me was it was an area that was very special to me. And in Wangi National Park, it's a special spot where I used to track a lot of stuff in there, and I found this place years ago, and it was just a lovely vista and lovely old waterhole, and you looked out, and what it was I wanted guests to walk in and just feel the space, because remember, a lot of people come from big towns. They don't all have backyards. They might be living in a flat. They might be living in big cities. You know, show them the space, start there, and then just start to evolve, you know, on your safari. I think that's it.
And by the way, those waterholes in Hwangi in Zimbabwe, they're one of a kind. They're incredible. Some of my best experiences I ever had were staying in those waterholes. The stuff that goes on there is just mind-blowing. But I want to chat first about the mobile camping experience, because I think we've got some listeners that are very well and comfortable and au fait with all the different types of safari experiences in Southern Africa, but we've got some listeners who are not. So to explain, a typical safari in lodges, you know, is either a drive or fly-in safari where you arrive at an airstrip or you drive to a lodge or a camp, and it's a fixed lodge with nice rooms, but sometimes they're referred to as camps, because they consist of, you know, gum poles and canvas and things like that. But for all intents and purposes, it's got running water, toilets, everything you would have at a small little boutique hotel. Mobile camps, on the other hand, are, as the word describes, they mobile, and it's a lot more basic. And so can you tell me how it is in a mobile safari somewhat more humbling and transformative? And also, by the way, just because you're camping in a more basic setup doesn't mean that necessarily it's going to be, I hate to use the word, but cheaper.
No, it's not. It's not always cheaper, I tell you that much, because there's obviously a lot involved in that. Yeah, thanks for asking. I mean, I think it's probably one of the most misunderstood sectors, you know, especially whether it be in Zim or Bots. I will tell you that with Botswana is blessed. What's so lovely is that you can literally start in either Maun and finish in Kasani and then go across to Vic Falls, or vice versa. All the parks link beautifully. So when we talk about mobile, I think the word camping overseas is a word that people do in the mud and the rain sometimes, and at concerts and things like that, and you have these little flimsy tents. It's not, I think ours is more glamping. I was told glamping the other day. A guest said to me, "No, Dave, you glamp, you don't camp." And I agree with him. You know, we've got wonderful staff that go ahead, they set up the whole camp. You've got ensuite on all the tents. You know, most mobile companies will do ensuite. So you've got a shower, bucket shower, and but it's not so much about that. It's very comfortable, but it's the experience. It's very much about the experience. You're in a private camp of your own. You're completely disconnected. You know, it's interesting. We get a lot of multi-generational families out of the States, where you will literally have from the 8-year-old grandson all the way up to usually the grandparents, who just want to have their whole family there. You can't have a more immersive experience for a family than like that, because literally there's no Wi-Fi, there's no nothing. But you know, we're out on drives, we're playing football at lunchtime, or soccer. But it, you know, we're doing all those things. We're having, there's a lot of stuff happening. And I'll just give you a story about a guy who, I'd guided him for a few days. And he said to me, "You know, Dave," he had been to all the most incredible camps. He'd been all over the Delta, to Mombo, to Vumbura, to Duba Plains. He'd been to all these places. He had been to Tanzania. And I was sitting there listening to him. And here we were.
And these are all some of your places you're referring to are like top high end.
Oh, top high end, beautiful lodges with everything that opens and shuts. And here we are sitting in tents, just pretty, as you call, basic or rustic. For me, it's my happy place. I happily do all those high end things. But hey, this is where I come from. And I said to him, "Look, I'm a little confused. Help me. You can afford anything. You can go anywhere. What were you looking for? What made you arrive here?" He said, "You know, Dave, let me explain something to you." He said, "When I go on holiday with my family, this year, end of the year, I'm actually hiring out an island and I'm going to fly my family in and we're going to have a great time. So when I stay in hotels, I stay in the best hotels. There's no problem there." But he said, "You know what the problem is? What I've encountered is that for every $1,000 I spend, another layer is put between me and the wildlife. And by coming on more of a camping safari with you, I actually feel like I'm back to where I need to be." He said, "Last night, I sat up in my bed. That lion called." He said, "Oh my God," I hugged my wife. I was like, "We are going to die. We have got canvas between us and that lion." And he said, "I felt alive. I was actually on safari again." And he said, "You know, that's where I started. And then as I got wealthier, et cetera, you know, we just got to afford." And he said, "I've seen it all. But right now, I just experienced an actual safari."
Mm. That is the epitome of transformational travel, isn't it? That is it.
Yep.
That is, in a sense, I think, going to be something that people are searching for and will desire more and more. I know that if money was no object for me and I wanted to go on a trip, I can assure you I wouldn't be hiring a luxury villa on an island or somewhere. If you can afford to have a private guide and go and be in one of the most remote places in Africa and explore and discover, like that costs money, because it's logistics, it's time, it's planning. You know, that's a lot of the planning that you have to put in to put these mobile safaris together. You're out there and you're actually really learning and you're experiencing and you're feeling everything that is around you. And I think that's incredible.
They go there for a feeling, whether it be for a view, for the crispness of the air, you know, sitting and looking and having a couple of coffee on a deck or whatever. Everyone's got that moment. And round the fire, I find, and I agree with you, you know, when you're round the fire, I guess it comes back to our primitive self, where we can reflect on our day, our life, our, you know, whatever's happening, and also just have some wonderful chats, you know, in the moment with people. And it's, you know, I think a lot of people in their real lives, you know, when I say their real lives, their lives where they're out there hustling, you're making a living, living in big cities. You put a lot of layers on yourself. But when you're in the wild and sitting around a fire, you know, those layers, they slowly but surely come off. And, you know, you genuinely start to see people. And I think that's so important on these type of safaris. It's very important for me.
You know what it often makes me think about is, you know, when you're at a restaurant with a friend or on a date or whatever, and then your partner goes off to the loo, what's the first thing you do?
They're going to look at your phone.
Yeah. It's just it's like we've lost the, I just, sometimes when I immediately reach for my phone, I think to myself, what would I do pre-phones? Because you and I are of the age group that's actually had a life without a phone.
Yeah, I started with a brick.
With a brick, yeah. You know, it's a really weird, uncomfortable feeling. And I've seen it with people on mobile safaris where they'll still get out their phone and just look at some photos, even though they've got no Wi-Fi connections. Correct. But talk to me a little bit about that disconnecting aspect, because I know you can make a plan for people on a trip who have got high level, you know, businesses or critically ill family that they just need to check in with once in a while, because we know we've got the Starlinks of this world. You're going on a safari where there's no mobile connection and there's no Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, you bring that up. I've just actually finished a trip recently. I was actually at our bush camp in Wangi National Park, and our mobiles, we don't offer Wi-Fi. And so an interesting thing is, and what I've found, and I may have mentioned this before, but bad Wi-Fi is worse than no Wi-Fi. That's the first thing. Secondly, the disconnect in camps is unbelievable. Some guests arrived recently in our lodge, and they had younger kids. Well, I'd say sort of teenagers, and the daughter was probably 17. She said, "You know, where's the service?" And the father turned to her and he said, "You've already had service. Didn't you see the waiter come and take your plate? You've had service. What are you talking about? There's no Wi-Fi here. And let's communicate." And from then on, I mean, they were just the happiest. They were all fine because they just realized that, okay, it's not here. And communicated and had a great time. And I chatted to them about it. And I asked, especially the kids, so how did that, you know, how does this feel? They said, you know what, to be honest, once we knew we didn't have it, we weren't worried about it. We were actually, you know, they were relaxed in it.
We're living in a world now where actually it's considered a transformative experience, just disconnecting alone.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about things that don't involve wildlife or flora and fauna per se when you're out on a safari with your guests. Are there any moments where you have deep and meaningful conversations with your guests, or where it goes, or maybe it's like sounds and things like that. I've been picking up a lot of that about like taking a moment just to stop on a safari and observe and listen to what's going on around you. I just wanted to throw that out there and see what you had in mind.
What you're talking about is, I absolutely love the auditory safari. So for me, like one of the fun things, I've just actually been down in Mana Pools, staying at a camp called Little Komichi. And one of the mornings, what we did was we got up at 5, and the deal was, and I love doing this when I'm in that area, we get tea and coffee and we race to the boat in the dark, get on the boat and just drift into the current. And no one, once coffee and tea and stuff is poured, no one can talk for the first half hour. You can't talk.
You make that a rule.
It's the rule. That's how it works. And we just drift. And you got hippos. Obviously, there's lots of hippos. And we just drift. And we just listen to just the day starting. And it can be anything. And remember, you on the Zambezi, so it can be anything. You've got people on the Zambian side in some of the areas. You've got wildlife on both sides. So you can hear a lion call. You can hear some, you know, an alarm call. You can hear it. Birds, and then the, you know, that cacophony of birds just starting up the morning chorus. And I love that. You know, another thing I absolutely love doing is in the evenings, just parking at a water point and or if you find some Ellie's or something, and just ask everyone just to sit and listen, just feel it for a moment, you know, because as humans, we had such a deficit in terms of our senses. We don't use most of them so much anymore. And it's quite nice to start using them again and just get a different feel. And again, it comes back to the feel of your safari. And I'm a big believer in that sort of stuff. And I love doing that with guests. And I think they enjoy it. You know, they really seem to come away from it. And we've been amongst, like, say, for instance, we're just sitting in a herd of Ellie's and just listening quietly and listening to them feed. And if you can hear some of their communications, the rumbling, etc., or whatever is happening, they love it. But they also sometimes a little bit, because it's dark, it's now dark, you can't see them moving. They're big animals, and they'll often say, well, you know, that was an incredible, intense experience, because a little bit of fear, but also just suddenly they really had to enhance their senses because they had to listen and they were trying to see better in the dark. But it's wonderful. People love it. They absolutely love it. And often when we sit around the fire and I say, let's talk about the moments of the day, and people bring up that one of those moments, and we may have seen a stunning leopard, and yes, it'll definitely come up, but they will often say, you know, that moment was incredible, you know.
Wow. So yeah. I learned a little bit about that in meditation times. You know, meditation, I don't do it that much anymore, but what it does teach me, or has taught me, is that what you do is often isolate any noise or sound that comes up. You acknowledge it, isolate it, and then, you know, you kind of just work around it. And that's probably what's happening out on safari. And I've seen it with people and guests that I've been with, where I say, let's do the same thing as you're talking about. They go, oh, it's so quiet. And I was like, well, is it? It's not noisy, but it's not quiet. And then you start picking out all the different sounds around you, and actually there's quite a lot going on, but they couldn't pick it up. And when you start to pick it up, you start to realize what a ecosystem you're in, because there's so much going on around it. Love it.
A small story around that is, like, I had a guest, she had grown up in New York her whole life. She'd been in New York, came out on honeymoon. She had never seen proper darkness, never heard all these sounds. And actually being in the camp was the most terrifying thing for her, because in New York, there's always a siren, there's always a something, there's always people, there's always ambient light. And for the first time, she really experienced. So for her first couple of days on safari, it was terrifying for her. She was, you know, very nervous. But once she got used to that, she, you know, she enjoyed it. But very different experiences, very different.
And so going back to Kazuma Trails, that's the name of your mobile company.
So Kazuma Trails comes from the Kazuma National Park. You both have it on the Kazuma side, Zimbabwe side, as well as the Botswana side. And to be honest with you, when I was a younger, I used to go there a lot to Kazuma. It's one of these wild little national parks, it's a wonderful place. And I just loved the name. And that's where the name came from, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, it's a unique operation, Dave, because you have that ability to take guests on a safari from Zimbabwe into Botswana. I know you can cover anywhere in Africa, really, because a lot of your guests come back and want to travel to all corners. You've just come back from Uganda. But in particular, that the beauty of that operation you've developed is having guests, having that contrast between Zimbabwe and Botswana. Talk to us a little bit about what you love to tell your guests or potential guests about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fortunate in that I have a guide's license in both countries. So being fortunate for that, and having guided in both sides extensively, it is wonderful to be able to. So with Bots, I mean, Bots are so special. It's blessed, in fact, with when you're on a mobile. I mean, you can start in Maun and you go through, and you're through national parks and wildlife areas all the way through until you get to Kasani, and phenomenal ecosystems. I mean, we're talking about the Okavango Delta. I mean, firstly, that's breathtaking. It's wonderful. And then you come through into the Savuti area of Chobe. And that's a bit like Wangi, actually, where it's semi-arid. There's some pumped water points, but it's very special, actually. And then you go down onto, and a lot of people are negative about it, but I love Chobe along the floodplains, along the river, the Chobe River. It's very special to me because I just find the diversity there is probably some of the most incredible diversity of wildlife, certainly in Botswana and Zimbabwe. I mean, you see some incredible stuff. So you've got a lovely mix with that, but mostly vehicles and boats. And then you can hop across the border and be in Tawangi National Park, where we can both game drive and now get you out on foot and do some walking and do some, you know, some different stuff, which really the diversity of that is great. And you can do it vice versa. So I'm very fortunate to be able to give people different experiences like that.
In order to be a good guide, you've got to be a good people person. And this is where we tie it into a transformative travel experience, because you're able to understand a guest, and that starts in the planning process, doesn't it? Putting the right trip together. On the internet somewhere, it describes your operation as about as old school as it gets.
Yeah, no, I swear, about as old school. Yeah, fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know. Old school has very different connotations, but I think I just didn't buy into you have to have, the fancy, everything fancy, so fancy that it actually is a hotel in the bush, as opposed to we're still on safari. And that comes back to the story I told you about the guest who said to me, it's about the layers. The more money I spend, there's more layers between me and the wildlife. What we're trying to do is make sure that those layers are limited to great comfort, that you still have the most wonderful experience. And that, to us, is the most important thing. And that's where our old school is about, I would say.
Yeah, no, 100%, mate. And also, you've developed an operation which is designed to get the best out of this incredible wilderness areas that you operate in. And I say that with all my heart, because that's what it's all about, isn't it? Is understanding that incredible place of Botswana, the Chobe, the Delta, Wangi, Mana Pools, and then making sure that you get the most incredible experience in these amazing places. And so if you're going to do it and you want to do it properly, I would not hesitate to send someone your way.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind. But yes, I agree with you. Listen, the guide's job is to be that person, that conduit, that transforms things for guests. And we have to understand we're living our best lives. I mean, we have a good job. And you might be in an area where there might be few other people, etc. But it's still an incredible ecosystem, and you should be enjoying it. And if you're enjoying it, your guests are enjoying it. But just look around you. You know, I think maybe sometimes we get a bit complacent as guides, but we have to remember. What I always tell people is remember that first moment, and I do my best to do that too, still to this day, is that remember the moment you saw your first elephant. Remember that feeling also of the first elephant walking right up, you know, as a trainee guide or whatever, Ellie walking right up to your car. And, you know, that special moment with mixed with a little bit of apprehension and excitement. And afterwards, just that, how cool was that? Remember that for your guests also, and try and give them that. And, you know, so if you can do that and you have the good energy like that, I genuinely believe you're going to give your guests an incredible transformative safari. That's for sure.
Legend. Yeah, absolutely. You've entered into the world of podcasts, which I don't know why you've done that. That's that's madness.
funny that.
But I've really enjoyed listening to it so far. I mean, what I like about it is that, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but I like it because it seems like you're developing it on your terms, finding people that you want to sort of talk to and having the chats that you feel people need to hear. And I love, like, you had Mark Dermacay, who, you know, paddled across the Atlantic. I mean, rode across the Atlantic and just smashed it completely, and had his story about starting his mobile company, busing down from Switzerland to Cape Town. And then you had the geezer guide, your guide mate in Zim, talking about the life of an eggshell, which was the most intense scientific
breakdown. But I loved it. You lost me completely. Might as well have been talking about the solar system.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Exactly. I'm trying to do it on my terms. It took me a year and I read so much on podcasts and that you have to have an idea and you have to do this. And then I read some stuff, which was like, well, just go with it and your direction will come and just start doing it. And I suddenly realized that there's a lot of cool education out there that we can give. And some people will listen and some will say, oh, that was a bit intense. And yes, I agree with you. We've talked to, you know, great people, Benson, Keith Vincent, all sorts. And yes, we've got quite a few still in coming up. We've been recording a couple. Yeah, they'll soon be posted. So that's great. And thank you. It's definitely one where we genuinely want to educate people on maybe some different stuff, because I think a lot of podcasts can start to end up being more, let me take you on safari. Yes, we definitely take people on safari and we could do the same thing and be a quote unquote influencer in that sphere or whatever. But because of my background in training in Zim, of guides, and also all the guests obviously I deal with still as a guide, I want to just try and make it as informative and fun and educational. And also there's that young guide, or whether male or female, doesn't matter, that are waiting to be inspired, and maybe they'll just listen to this. And what I like is that everybody started somewhere, and I think everyone has to know that. They have to know that everyone started with very humble beginnings. An overnight success is 20 years. I mean, they got to understand that. And that's important. Mm. So, yeah, hopefully that's cool. Coming through on that podcast. But thanks for listening. You're probably number 4 in the line who are listening. So that's great.
After the family. The key is with all of these things is like you never start it if you want it to be perfect before you go.
Mm.
I mean, this is fairly apt, but don't be afraid to make mistakes.
Oh, trust me, I make them all the time. Recently, I just did a huge interview with someone and the card I was using on the recording device corrupted. So I've had to phone him and we've made another plan.
Oh, good. Wonderful. Well, completely transparent with everybody, this is our second recording.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, we've had our issues with the recording. So, I'm hoping we have made some form of a sense on the whole thing anyway.
No, I'm sure we have. Anyway, I'll have a link to Safari Insight. No, please keep it up. I love it. Honestly, I really look forward to having some more episodes. And do you honestly think we'll be talking about transformative travel in years to come? Or do you think it's another fad? I think the essence of coming to Africa and especially being on a mobile safari and staying in camps that you've created like you have in Hwangi, where you keep things true to their word about being a wilderness experience. What do you think?
Well, for me, in terms of, I think the terminologies will always shift and change. I have to Google some of the wordings nowadays in the travel industry, but I think the number one thing is that if the message should be this, is in that guests must understand when they come, they are all part of a conservation effort. And their dollars, most of the companies that are operating are, if nothing else, employing people and mostly are putting back into the parks. And, you know, I really believe that as long as you're coming on safari, you know, you're part of that. And hopefully from your podcast, they'll learn a little bit more about what they, you know, what they could be feeling, what they could be experiencing, and that it's not just about racing around, whether you're on a 3-hour race around from Kasani into the park. There's some deeper safaris they could do. So, and so I hope everyone comes with the right mindset. I think that's important.
I think that's a beautiful way to end off, Dave, because a lot of the focus in this series has been about the transformative experience that travelers have within. But actually, let's take a step back in all of this and know that without the guests, without these travelers coming out on safari, we don't have a reason strong enough to protect this incredible wilderness space. So that we're transforming the ability to conserve these places through travel.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. And I think, you know, people understand that when they travel to Africa, it doesn't matter which country they come to, understand they go back as our ambassadors. And it's so good. Come back and, you know, be part of it and be part of the conservation and be part of this travel and get something out for yourself. That's so important.
Yeah. Legend. Thanks, Dave. I really appreciate it, mate.
Jeepers, you tax me. James.
I know.
Ay, 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 ay.
I put you through the ringer, eh?
I have to think on things. My goodness me. Okay. No, cool. No, James, I really appreciate
it. Well, touche. I mean, I had to listen to Life
in a Shell.
I was like, do you know how many times I had to rewind and go, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I know. You got like, what? What did he say?
Love it.
Yeah, no, exactly. Thanks for thinking of me, James. I appreciate it.